What is going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here today. We have another interview, Tim. It's like every day we're doing interviews. I feel like we just threw out all these feelers and everybody said yes. It's very exciting. But yeah, we got Eric Ingles on later on. He's a Montreal insider. Cash is a paycheck from Montreal. So like he's going to be very pro Montreal. I'm going to push him on some issues. It'll be a lot of fun. But anyways, no baby yet. Yeah. Baby's due today. Number 8, we should put a poll up. What do you think for, what is it, a boy or a girl? Because the baby could be born in the next 20 minutes. I don't know. What do you think, Tim? Is my little baby going to be a boy or a girl?
I think it's going to be another girl. Yeah, at this point. Look, the look on your face. You want a boy so bad. What's I know you'd never say it out loud. But.
What's your problem? You know what I mean? I thought we were friends. No, I would love another little girl.
But. What's Danielle's feeling on, like, does she feel like it's imminent or it could be another couple days or what?
Any second. She's been.
She's ready.
Laboring is a word that I would use, but it doesn't apply here because she's not in labor. But she's been slow. She's slowing down. You know, you've never had a child that you know of, but it's baby's ready. I mean, baby's there. Head down. Let's go. Like it's right there, but it's exciting. The kids are excited. I'm excited. Any second now, you know what I mean? So anyways, let's just get this ad out of the way and we'll get to the interview. Well, unless you want to talk about your love life.
No, let's talk some hockey. Let's talk some gambling.
All right. This episode is brought to you by Bet36. Tim gets so uncomfortable when I ask him about his love life. You guys notice that?
The way you ask it. Just Why? Like, just talk to me like a normal person. You're like, Tim, tell me about your love life. Like you're some creepy uncle.
How do you want me to ask? How's the girlfriend? Did you guys do anything fun this weekend?
Yeah, that's great. But I'm not asking anymore because you started off weird.
Whatever. You're such a child. This episode is brought to you by Bet365, proud partner of Dropping the Gloves. Open an account today with Bet365 and bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it is never ordinary. At Bet365. Use code HockeyCA, everybody. Do us a favor. Gamble and win. Only really baseball going on right now. I guess you could do the slap fights. You seen that?
Yeah.
White's involved in it. You like slap people in the face. Would you ever do that?
No, I don't even like looking at it. I don't like watching it.
I know. Isn't it uncomfortable? They put their hands behind the back and they just, it's just outrageous.
The way the knees buckle too when they get it good.
Violence.
Who's that for? That's not fun for anyone.
It's not fun for anybody. I don't know. That's actually a good point. No skill involved whatsoever. Like, just slap as hard as you can.
Okay, which enforcer, you know, modern or current or whatever, would be good at this one? Who could take that slap?
You need a short neck, because I think it's all the whip on the neck. So I would be done. I have a long neck that's not very strong. A thick, short neck.
Who's that guy that was in the TV show and...
Jordan
Nolan?
Still
playing in like the ECHL.
Oh, John Morasty.
Yeah.
He would be incredible.
Yeah.
He would not get past the testing, if you know what I'm saying. If there is any kind of allegedly. I don't want to get in trouble here. But current day players, you would think a Radko Gudas would come to mind. Short, stocky. Don't watch it, everybody. It's not worth it. But anyways, enjoy the interview. I hope you guys like it. Montreal, interesting team. I actually like how they're going about their rebuild.
It took this interview to look at on paper, and yeah. I like it too. I like
they're
it too.
Not
I think
jumping
they're
going to
leapfrog some other teams.
Yeah, but they're not getting too excited. I think Eric does a good job explaining it, where it's not like, let's go crazy and sign some, you know, high-end guys to try to lead these young guys. Like, let's just let them play. And we're not going to push them, and we're not expecting to, you know, have any success, because they won't. See if it pays off. All right, everybody, enjoy the interview, and we'll talk to you later. Cheers. Good morning. It's early. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Monday, early morning. Eric Ingles joining us here from his cottage, was in his bed. That's how early it is. He moved just recently from the bed to the porch. A little better scenery. Eric, thanks for joining us. You are a Montreal insider. Thanks for joining us on Dropping the Gloves today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. You know what? It, just starting off here, I've never been so enthralled to be taller than John Scott. Like, look, look at the difference here. As someone who's 5'7" and a half, generously listed at HockeyDB, yeah, this is a big moment for me.
Isn't it a beautiful thing to be tall? And I don't state that lightly. It's a great thing. Let's go to the height thing right away. Who is the Montreal Canadiens captain?
Nick Suzuki.
How tall is he?
He's about 6 feet.
I have a theory, Eric, and it's pretty substantiated. You know, it's proven. You have to be above a certain height to be an effective captain, and the height for me is around 6'4". And Nick Suzuki maybe is 6 foot. Is that an issue for Montreal? When they got Kirby Dach, I thought that would be a perfect fit for them.
If you play 6'4", then it's fine. I think Suzuki has that reputation. He plays big, he plays hard, and that's what you need. I mean, obviously, you need a disparity in size in today's game. You need speed, you need all those different factors. But size is becoming, it's coming back, right? It's everything cyclical in the NHL. And now that Florida is one doing what they did, and I think everyone was impressed with the way Edmonton got through Dallas, but I think a lot of people would have chosen Dallas as, you know, Florida West. And for the very similar reasons, just the brand of hockey they play, heavy and hard. I just think it's coming back for sure. It's in vogue. And the Canadians obviously are focused on it also, right? They draft Slafkovsky first overall, and everybody thinks they're going to draft Shane Wright or Logan Cooley. You know, they've got some big guys on the back end, whether it's Jack Guy, Gooley, you know, these guys that are coming up. They made a move, obviously, for a skilled forward here who's 6 feet. They were happy to hear that he's, you know, over 6 feet when they went to the Russian combine with Dan Milstein, and there's Ivan Demidov, the guy that they wanted from the start. But they still have some strides to take, and you're right about Kirby. He's going to play an important role because he wasn't there all of last year.
Well, let's just back up, because the last time we had you on, it was 2021. We were talking before you came on. The Habs, miraculous run of the Stanley Cup Finals, right? Upsetting people, no business being there. Corey Perry scoring huge goals, playing fantastic. They lose to the Vegas Golden Knights, obviously, in the semifinals, or was it? It must have been the Cup Finals, Tim. What has happened since then? Because
Tampa in the finals.
Tampa in the finals. Excuse me. That's correct. What has happened since then? It's been a dramatic descent to last year, finishing dead last in the Atlantic. Aside from the Anaheim teams, San Jose, Anaheim, and the other garbage team who is Arizona, excuse me, I'm lumping in there, the worst goals against in the NHL. Like, just a very, very porous defense. What has happened in 2 years that you go from that high to all of a sudden the franchise is in disarray? Disarray is a strong word. I don't say disarray. Not competitive. What happened so fast?
Yeah, well, first of all, they were purposely not competitive over the last couple of years, right? You went through the last year of Marc Bergevin's tenure with the Montreal Canadiens. He set the team up to be successful in the playoffs. They had to make the playoffs, but once they got there, you had Weber, you had, you know, Josh Anderson flying at all cylinders, guys like Edmondson, Sherrod, and Petrie, where they were rolling out a defense, you know, that could play three guys 26 minutes a night. They had Carey Price, they had Brendan Gallagher and Paul Byron. You look at that team now, team that went to the Stanley Cup final, and the people who said that they were lucky to get there, I always think that's the most ridiculous thing ever. When you talk about a team that goes to the Stanley Cup final, like, you need every single team in a 32 team league needs everything to go right to make it that far. And beyond that, you have to earn it. You have to earn every element of it. And so they got a bit of luck in the Toronto series. John Tavares goes down in the first, you know, game of the series in a freak collision with Corey Perry. But they still beat Toronto in seven games. They still beat Winnipeg in a four-game sweep, a Winnipeg team that was, you know, an excellent team at the time, a team that was expected to kill Montreal. They beat Vegas in less than seven games, in six games, and then they ran into the one team that was playing better team hockey than them. But from that run, Carey Price, whatever damage he had to his knee, became so extensive that he would only play five more games over his career. Shea Weber, the stuff that he was dealing with that he recently spoke on upon being inducted to the Hall of Fame, you know, half an ankle he was playing on. He was having to take a lot of painkillers just to dress for a game. He was showing up on game days at 8 o'clock in the morning to be prepared for a game to play at night. He was in excruciating pain nonstop. Paul Byron tore the labrum in his left hip. He played in that playoff run with it injured. He had gotten a shot and tried to make it work and scored a miraculous goal in the Toronto series. That's postage stamp at this point. But like, he was damaged beyond repair and couldn't continue his career. You look at guys like Brandon Gallagher and the effect that it's had on him moving into his new contract. But basically, you have this transition from this team that was put together in one offseason that finally they went far, but not as far as they would have liked to have. And then coming out of that, it was clear you needed to make some monumental changes, including from the top down. So Mark Bergevin was out. Jeff Gorton was hired. Kent Hughes was brought on. And this, for the first time in Canadians history in over 100 years, they said, we're going to commit to doing this in a way that it's not just going to be to make the playoffs again. It's going to be to build a team that could contend year over year. And that's going to take some time. And I think the fans have done an unbelievable job of accepting that process. I think one of the huge things that's helped, Johnny, is you have Martin St. Louis coming in as coach, and the program that he has sold and the culture he has built, even with a team that was expected to do some losing, has been, you know, that's maybe Montreal isn't ahead of teams like Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit, in terms of who they have on their roster, in terms of how their prospects are valued or whatever it is, or their actual NHL players. I think where they're ahead, though, is culture. And we'll see how far that takes them as we go into the next season.
Well, you mentioned rebuilding and accepting the rebuild. And those teams you mentioned, they have accepted the rebuild. Ottawa, Buffalo, in just a perennial rebuild, it seems. And they've tried to get out of that rebuild phase and haven't been successful. Ottawa right now struggling to take that next step. Detroit in the same boat. Do you see Montreal's rebuild being a little different? I went back and looked at all the draft picks that Montreal selected in the last 10 years. They have a pretty good track record of drafting pretty solid NHL talent in the first round and then finding gems in the third, fourth, fifth round. Going back to 2007, I was shocked the draft that they had with PK Subban. They had Ryan McDonough. You had Yannick Weber. You have another solid NHL player in Max Pacioretty. So you fast forward to now, you have good first round picks. Do you see the last couple of years? You obviously got Demidov this year. You got David Reinbacher last year. Slakovsky's showing some signs. Are the pieces there to take that next step, or will they just follow in the footsteps of Ottawa and Buffalo and Detroit and just stall when you're supposed to take that final step?
Listen, it's a great question. I think they're at a pivotal point of their rebuild, and one that those teams that you mentioned when they were at that point didn't necessarily handle well, which extended the kind of miserable phase that everybody has dealt with in Buffalo and Ottawa specifically. It's so easy that when you see the core coming together, a young, promising core of players, to get ahead of yourself and start to make a move or two that all of a sudden you think is supposed to propel you a bit forward, but ends up knocking you back two steps. And I think we've seen that in both those respective markets. In Detroit, you know, it seems to have been a more of an organic kind of build where they had that patience, where they were willing to let their players develop in the American Hockey League, where they focused on creating some insulation on the NHL roster with some of the older guys that have come in, guys like Ben Chiarot, you know, guys who were in Montreal previously, Jeff Petrie. You need some seasoning, you need some insulation for this young talent, right? Like, I look at Ottawa and go back to the days where a couple of years ago where you had all this premium talent, like when Thomas Chabot came in. When I looked at Thomas Chabot, I was saying, like, this guy has the ability to become a top five defenseman in the NHL. But all of a sudden, nobody's playing ahead of him in Ottawa's lineup, and he's playing 26, 27 minutes a game. And, you know, I still think he's one of the 60 best defensemen in the league, but has he hit his potential? And that's where, if you get impatient and start making certain moves, that's where you can create problems. I think of Buffalo, like, you go back to when Tyler Myers came into the league, and he had that incredible rookie season, and everyone from the fans to Bob McKenzie was saying, you know, this guy will be a Norris Trophy perennial contender. And then a year later, Henrik Talander and Tony Lidman are gone.
Yeah.
John, you know this inside out. Like, this is a tough game to play at a young age. The Canadians are very young. And I think one of the reasons that Kent Hughes abstained from the open market this year is Would he love to add a player that could reward the effort he's seen from his players over the last couple of years of what they knew would likely be losing hockey? Absolutely. Like, this is one thing you'd say about this team. The culture they have, they try hard in every single game. There's maybe a handful over the last 2 years you point out and say their effort wasn't there. But one thing he didn't want to do is sign somebody for 4 years that could help them maybe take a step towards the playoffs this year, but will detract from their ultimate goal of trying to be a perennial contender. And that's where they're at this sensitive juncture. And I think that patience that I talked about within the fan base, it might wane a little bit this year. We'll see. They still have a couple months to make some moves here. I think there's trades that will be available on the market to them and everybody else that's still in the market to acquire some players. But how much will they get done that nudges them that much closer to the playoffs?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that they care that much about that versus their ultimate goal. And that's crucial. I think some other teams that we were just talking about, they've gotten impatient in that process and set themselves back instead of propelled themselves forward.
Impatient meaning they put expectations on the team where they just say, we have to win now. The rebuild has taken too long.
The rebuild is over?
Yeah.
The Dorion rebuild is over, but like also the going to sign a guy that's, you know, somewhere between 29 and 32 for a 7-8 year deal that, you know, you're not getting, you know, that your team is not mature enough to push to be a Stanley Cup contender. So you're losing 2 to 3 years, the best 2 to 3 years of the deal with that player, no matter how well they perform. And the goal is not, the goal for Montreal for too long was, let's make the playoffs and see what happens. That's not the mentality of this management that's taken over. It's the opposite. It's by the time we're making the playoffs, it won't be, let's see what happens. It'll be, we have a chance. And we're going to have a chance and extend that chance for a year. They're looking at, you know, teams like Tampa and Chicago and whoever it was in LA over those years where it was, we're going to have a chance 4 or 5 years in a row, 5 or 6 years in a row, because we didn't jump the gun trying to just make the playoffs. And that's a very difficult balance to strike in a market like Montreal, where the expectations are, hey, like, there's 24 Stanley Cups here, and it's since 1993 that there's been one. And, you know, they want to see progress and momentum. And I think the fans are so excited about the youth of the team, about Marty St. Louis, about the culture that I was talking about, that you're flirting with a bit of a scary situation, that the patience that you have as a management group could not match the patience of the fan base for the first time here. Because if you don't see that forward momentum, right, like, say a few injuries happen, key injuries happen to Montreal Canadiens players this year, and they're not able to take a step out of the NHL basement, then there will be legitimate concern coming from all pockets of the fan base. Whereas I think from a management perspective, they say to themselves, if everybody stays healthy, then we could be in the mix for a playoff spot, which is, I think, is true. But when does everybody stay
healthy? And then they had to endure the fan base year after year of Marc Bergevin just making terrible moves. And head-scratching moves, the Jonathan Duran, the Sergachev trade, the signing at just a plethora of third-line forwards, grinders. That was his MO. I like a grinder. We got to have him on our team. So if I'm a fan of Montreal, I'm happy, but I'm also, like, frustrated. Like, let's go. I see the light. Let's get there quick. So, yeah, I wonder how long that runway will be for Hughes and St. Louis, because it was a long run for Bergevin there.
Yeah, I think when you look at Mark's moves in isolation, he made really, really good ones. Was he able to ever build something cohesive? You know, only in that last year when he said, you know what, I'm going to get all these players that I know will perform in the playoffs, and if we make it there, we'll have better than a, well, let's see what happens type of chance. And they did. You know, they were full value. Like I said before, they were full value going to where they got to. At the end of the day, my opinion on the Bergevin era, like, I think Marc Bergevin is an excellent hockey man. He, if you look back on his trades, John, and the moves that he made a lot of really good ones. What he wasn't was an executive on the level of, you know, a Jeff Gordon who had worked through Boston and New York and kind of climbed his way through every element. And I think one of the interesting things Jeff Molson did here in Montreal is he said, I need somebody like that and a hockey man. This is a two-person job. And so you've got Jeff Gordon, who came in, who has got that executive stature, who was a GM in the league for a long time, but also saw the behind-the-scenes business of how to build an organization, how to harmonize different departments. And then you bring in a guy like Ken Hughes, who's got this incredible experience as an agent in contract negotiation and trade value and all those things. And I think they've worked really well together so far. But hey, they're approaching the most difficult turn in this whole process, right? They're 2.5 years into an officially stated rebuild. They've seen some momentum in their culture, in the way they are, like in the way they in the program they've set up. And now it's, how are you going to take that to the next level without messing up your big plan, you know?
So well, one of the most important pieces of that rebuild, arguably the most important, will be Slafkovský, who they just signed to on July 1st to an eight-year deal at 7.6 per. It's a lot of money to commit to a guy who, you know, had a good breakout season, 20 goals, 50 points. How is he worth that money? What does he have to do to become worth that, and how do you see that contract playing out?
I think that contract is going to be a complete bargain. It has the probability of being a bargain within 3 years of it being signed. And don't forget, it starts a year from now. He's on the cap for 880 or something like that this year. But honestly, with the way that the incredible thing about Juraj Slafkovský is the rate of progression. He goes from a guy that everybody's looking at and saying, maybe this guy belongs to the American Hockey League, to, wow, he belongs exactly where he is on the first line of the Montreal Canadiens. And his ability to turn what was his biggest weakness, which would be a normal weakness coming from Europe and being an 18-year-old kid stepping into the NHL, is playing away from the puck and reading the game. He turned that into his biggest strength within a year. It was a remarkable transformation that I got to give a lot of credit to Juraj himself for kind of ignoring the noise around him and focusing on the process that Martin St. Louis and Director of Development Adam Nicholas kind of set forth with him. Those two guys deserve a ton of credit also, because they kept him on the ground, they kept him level, and they also fought against the idea that the American Hockey League would be a better place for him. You know, the whole thing with them was, if he's going to learn to play at NHL pace and learn to read things at NHL pace and make the right reads and get to the right spots, it's not going to happen at AHL pace. And so they were adamant on keeping him there. And right when he was floundering, like at his most last November, that was when St. Louis, instead of saying, hey, maybe it's time to sit out of the lineup, he moved him up with Caulfield and Suzuki, and boom, scored right away. And the rest, you know, has been kind of this upward trajectory. And I think he's going to continue on that upward trajectory. There might be a bit of flatlining a little bit, and then continuing up. I don't see him going back down. I'm going to tell you right now, it was 20 goals and 50 points, but it was 40 over the last like 40 games of the season. He was playing 20, 21 minutes a night against the best players in the world, night in, night out, first power play, and just completing that duo extremely well. I think he's going to be a really good player this game.
Well, he better be. We're talking like he's the 10th overall. He was number one overall, Eric.
Yeah.
He better damn well be Celebrini, Bedard, Slafkovský, Owen Power, Jack Hughes, Dahlin, Hirschire, Matthews, McDavid, Ekblad, McKinnon. Those are all number one overall picks.
Yeah.
This guy has to be a superstar. We're not talking like a fifth overall. This guy has to carry the load.
It's an excellent point, but also like look at those guys that you just named, right? Like McKinnon, he went 3 years, his first 3 years in the NHL, not getting more than what? I think he topped out at 52 points. I don't want to misspeak. I'm not going on Google right now, but he talked about how he thought he was working really hard and all of a sudden realized there's a whole other level of working hard. And now he's the premier player of the league, depending on who you ask. I think he's just unbelievable.
Oh, he's the number one.
I look at Lafreniere, a more recent first overall pick, who a lot of people in New York and around the hockey league were looking at and saying, is this guy going to be a top line player? Like, there was a lot of questions about that through his first three seasons in the NHL, and much fewer of them right now. I look at Jack Hughes when he stepped into the league. And so I think it's a different era now. Like, people expect that an 18-year-old is going to step into the league. The salary cap being stagnant for 3 years, 4 years in a row with the pandemic created that even more, right? Like, you needed to have young talent infused because the numbers weren't moving, and you had to have guys on entry level. And I just think the most important thing is that the player turns into what you're saying, John.
Yeah.
If you want him to, you need to have the right people who around him to create that mentality of don't worry about what everybody's saying. Don't worry about the fact that you're only hitting 40 points this year or 50 points. Don't worry about that right now. You're going to worry about this, 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 and this, because this is going to make you become exactly who we know you are. And like the Canadians have that. And you have Marty St. Louis behind the bench, you have that. And when you have a guy like Adam Nicholas, who is a name that's probably proliferating a bit in the NHL world, because the Canadians went from like, they have the worst skills development and talent development model in the league to they might have the best one now. Like what they've built as a development staff with people like Adam at the top of it and Scott Pellerin and Marie-Philippe Poulin and like what they're doing, Francis Bouillon, Rob Ramage, from a development standpoint, they are really putting a dent in the idea that you can't develop hockey sets. This is not just about throwing tires at guys and having them skate around and this. Everything they're doing is training, game simulation type situations. And I think they are setting the bar for a lot of teams, whereas beforehand they were so far underneath the bar from a development standpoint that like it was embarrassing.
So you fast forward to this year, the draft. In the sphere, everyone's excited. You're sitting there. I'm guessing you were in Vegas.
I wasn't. I was okay. In Montreal.
You were in Montreal.
I was at Board of Governor meetings the day before. That's so.
Stop bragging, Eric. Okay, we get it. You're important. The Canadians brass are sitting there. Everybody knew they wanted Demidov. They wanted him. The potential for him to fall to number five was there. When it hits to number five, how excited was Montreal, because this was the guy. You know, he's skilled. He's going to just change the Montreal Canadiens offensive outlook. They have the top line. We get that. This guy is potentially the most skilled player in this draft, and he falls to number five. How excited was everybody surrounding the Montreal area?
That's the great question, because for as excited as the Canadiens were and those guys were to get that player, I don't think the fans have been more excited about a player coming to their organization since I couldn't even think of one to name. Aside from, like, if I look back my own life watching hockey, maybe when Saku Koivu first came into the league, and not even when he was drafted and had an unbelievable kind of first showing and showed that type of potential that maybe not even anybody expected that he had. Like, I don't know if Canadiens fans have been as excited about a player since. They haven't had a player this talented in the system since Alex Kovalev. And they loved him. You know, he brought everybody out of their seats, and this player has that potential. A lot has to go right. He's got to develop. He's got to figure out North American game. He's got to come over here to begin with, which we're expecting will be in a year from now, barring some really strange, unforeseen circumstances that you attach to any player that comes out of Russia. But the desire of the player is very apparent. The ability of the player, I always say, like, I find the draft conversation to be nauseating. You know, people ripping apart players left and right and center who have only watched like 10-minute YouTube highlights of the player and like don't realize that like these teams are spending 5 years building extensive profiles on who these kids are. But like, you watch a 10-minute highlight pack of Ivan Demidov playing, you have a pretty good idea of what this kid is. And we'll see how it translates to the pro game, which he hasn't played yet. He hasn't played it in Russia. But I don't think I've seen Canadiens fans more excited about a player in a very long time. And I think that excitement is justified. I think he's going to be a really good player.
Was there a little bit of a worry? Because last year, a lot of people wanted Mikhov, the Canadiens.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Canadians to pick him. He falls to seven. You end up with Reinbacher. Was there a sense of like, oh, no, they're going to do it again? Because there's another high-end Russian forward we missed out on. He went to Philly. Or was this locked in 100%? We're picking this guy. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Yeah, listen, from my vantage point, it was locked in 100%. From a fan's vantage point, I'm sure there was some trepidation about it. But the thing that I may have known that they necessarily wouldn't have that knowledge about is that they had a very different opinion of Ivan Demidov than they did of Michkov, you know, like a very different opinion. Talking about management, just their scouts and their managers love this player. It's less so about how they feel about Michkov. It's more so about how they feel about Demidov. They just feel there's a more complete profile here for them to hit what they want with the fifth overall pick. You know, when you draft fifth overall, You have to go with the player who you believe is at, you know, at by the time they hit 23, 24 and onwards is going to be the most, the absolute sure bet pick that, you know, they feel is going to have a lengthy and strong and good career. They felt that way about David Reinbacher, much more so than Michkov. It doesn't mean they didn't feel that way about Michkov at all, but they clearly liked Reinbacher more, and they weren't the only team. There was teams that was trying to that were trying to trade up with the Canadians to get Reinbacher.
Oh no,
ultimately,
yeah, no, not chirping that guy. It's just the sexiness of the skilled Russian. You know, there's just the unknown. Like, oh my goodness, this guy.
And he might be great.
Yeah.
Like the circumstances around Michkov when he got drafted were insane. You know, from his father ending up dead in a mysterious way a month prior to all the scuttlebutt about the player off the ice, on the ice. And ultimately, they made their pick. And fans, like you said, John, they were kind of like, you know, this team hasn't had a 50 goal scorer since Stefan Richer. This team hasn't had a 100 point player since Mats Näslund. And they were
Crazy.
looking at Michkov and even Shane Wright the year before that and saying, like, you know, these guys have been the consensus number two, number one guy overall for years. You know, Michkov, they were putting him in the same sentence as Bedard. So there was a lot of backlash and concern, and some of it landed at David Reinbacher's feet. Very unfortunately, you know, like in the age of social media, there were people going after him, and he's like, I just want to play hockey, man. Like, I'm going to be a good hockey player. And he is going to be a good hockey player. And we'll see what happens with Michkov in Philly, especially now that he's there. One thing that you just disassociate from the whole thing is like Demidov himself and what he is capable of doing. When I mentioned the Richer and Näslund, like the first thing that popped into my mind is like, I think this kid with his skill set, he could be the first player since Mats Näslund to score 100 points in a Canadiens uniform. And maybe that I don't want people to read that as, oh, I'm heaping this pressure on Demidov that he has to be that. Not at all. I just look at the talent and say, I don't think the Canadiens have had a player with that type of skill set since Kovalev was on the roster. And in that day and age, you know, he had 84 points in 82 games. So we'll see what happens.
One kid I want to ask about is Kirby Doc, who's been on our show multiple times and obviously had really tough injury history since he got drafted, really. Only two games last year. What have you heard about him? What is he going to play next year?
I was thinking all season about Kirby Doc. You know, second game of the year, he gets into a very strange collision with Jarrett Tinori that twists his knee to the level that he ends up with a torn MCL and torn ACL. And then he's wearing this label of, oh, Kirby Doc is injury prone. Like, is he? Like, he took a slash and broke his wrist in one incident, and in the other had a freak collision. Has he missed some games outside of that with a little thing here or there, a concussion? Sure. Do I label him as injured? No, I think he's been unlucky. He's been unlucky to this stage. Kirby, when he came into last training camp, looked like he was going to be the best player on the Montreal Canadiens. Like, coming into the season and first game in Toronto, I think he put up 2 points, and it was just like, this guy is going to be unbelievable at both ends of the ice. His competitiveness is unbelievable, and he was hitting that point of his career where I was like, he's going to take off here. He's going to go from like he had 38 points in 64 games to he's going to pass 60 points this year if he keeps playing for 82. But I was thinking about him all season, and this is what I was thinking. I was thinking, imagine what this guy, what is running through his head, watching Suzuki, Caulfield, Slafkovsky, Gouley, Jack Eichel, all of them take these steps in their development and how badly he wants to be a part of it. And I think the desire within the player is enormous. He is a huge difference maker. The Canadians were in the most one goal games in the NHL last year. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say if Kirby's in the lineup for all of them, they win, you know, more than half of them. But I think if you look at that this year and they're in the same situation, he's going to be a major difference turning a lot of those results around. And he just has that ability. And people are going to learn. People who are looking at him and they don't necessarily know, they're going to learn because he is tenacious on the puck. He's got an incredibly annoying stick. He steals pucks like better than anybody on this roster. And he has the ability as a similar player to Suzuki in terms of his vision, his playmaking, and his brain, and he can skate. And as long as his skating is still intact, the way he expects it to, because when I last spoke to him, I said, you know, physically, and he said, physically, I feel better than I ever have in my career. Like this surgery went very well. And if it was up to him, he would have been playing games at the end of last season. It wasn't up to him. It was up to the team. And they said, nope, we want you ready for next season. And I just look at the player's desire, like what must be burning inside of him. And I think this is going to be a great, great experiment here with Kirby Doc. I think he's going to have a really big year.
No, I'm a big Kirby Doc fan. I think he's got the physical size and the skills to be a huge impact. I mean, I think he's a number two center on any NHL team. Like he's a solid player, which begs the question. You have a star first line, Slafkovský, Suzuki, Caulfield, proven. And then it's just a cupboard's bare after that. No additions in the offseason. They bring in Bear Boulay. Good, you know, tertiary piece. He's not going to light the world on fire. You got Gallagher on the second line, Josh Anderson languishing on the third line, maybe second line. Will they finish better this year than last year?
Yeah, like that's the question, right? And everybody's asking it. And I'm kind of loath to answer it on July 22nd because I just think there are, it's ironic to me. All the names that we were talking about, the main names that we were talking about on the trade market over the last 3, 4, 5 months are still there, right? Like they're all still available. I don't know what the Canadians intend on doing between now and the beginning of the season. I do expect that this roster is going to change a little bit, especially up front. I think that one thing is going to get done where a player comes in here. Now, if Kent Hughes can't find a fit, he's not going to force it. He's not going to do something that, again, sets back his long-term plan. So if this is what they have and this is where they're going in, then I think it's really debatable that they'll do much better. I think it's really debatable. But on the flip side of that, health will be a determinant, as it is for every team. The other will be, you have this young defense, right? You have, outside of Matheson and Savard, guys who have 130 games of experience or less. But you have some guys like Logan Mailloux, who's ready for the next step, in my opinion. Lane Hutson, who I would expect he's going to be the NHL to start. David Reinbacher, who his game is so translatable to the NHL in terms of the way he thinks it already as a young defenseman. And like, they could, all three of them, start in the American Hockey League because they still have Struble and Harris and Barron and Jack Guy and Gouley, and the list goes on of young defensemen who have gained some valuable experience. I look at the Canadians and say, where they're growing organically could get them higher up in the standings just based on what they have in terms of their culture, their style of play, and how they're now baked into it after the second half of last season, and now they've adapted to that. The other side, you look around, you know, Ottawa got better, Buffalo arguably got better, Detroit arguably got better, and that's not counting all the teams that you expect to be in the playoffs, right? Like Boston, we don't know how those long-term moves are going to look, but they filled two essential needs getting Zadorov and Lindholm, right? Like everyone who thinks they're going to drop off. Tampa lost Stamkos. They gained Gensel. You know, they lost Sergachev. They've made other moves. You know, are they going to fall off with Kucherov and Vasilevsky finally healthy? No, like, I don't think so. But I think Montreal, we'll see what happens over the next 2 months. Because honestly, I think it's premature to say something. I think if they are able to get a top six forward, just one, it really slots a lot of other players in the right chair. You talked about Gallagher, John, like he ends up on a third line with Anderson. And it's not just, oh, they're on the third line because they can no longer play in the top six. They end up in the third line insulated by the top six where they can become dangerous players as a third line. Like I look at those two guys, Gallagher had a better season than Anderson. Josh Anderson needs to have an amazing season going forward. Like this needs to be a huge comeback for him. And to me, the best possibility for him to do that is going to be that there's another top six forward that comes in that puts him in that third line chair, and he could take advantage of his matchups from there. If you have a third line of Newhook, Gallagher, and Anderson, and your top six is set with players who actually belong in the top six, you become a much more dangerous team. And I think the Canadians would like to accomplish that as early as before the end of this summer, but it's just not guaranteed. So we'll see who ends up in what chair.
Talking Mitch Marner?
I think that's intriguing, but no, I'm not really talking about him. I don't think that's a realistic possibility. But Trevor Zegras is still on the market. Martin Nikash, we'll see what happens with him in Carolina. They lost a lot of players, so maybe they kick the can down the road, but it doesn't look like it's going to be a long-term fit between them. Very encouraged that I saw a video floating around, and I hope it's authentic that it was this year that Patrick Laine is back to training, and that would mean that he's come out of the program. And I hope for him, just on a personal level, at a human level, that he's come out of it, much better equipped for the life that he's got to live. It's difficult for these kids. I think we need more empathy in the world for what they have to go through. It's not a, it doesn't balance things out that they make all kinds of money. Happiness is not guaranteed for anybody, and these kids deal with tremendous pressure and physical situations. John, you know this better than anybody. Like, it's a real physical task that can affect the rest of your life playing in the NHL. And so I hope he's in a good place physically, mentally. I do expect that if he is, it's going to be somewhere other than Columbus. I don't know if Montreal is a likely destination for him, but maybe this could be a redemptive year for him. But the point being, these guys that we've been talking about for months, they're still there. And there's probably a few other players that nobody's talked about that are also on the market. So,
Yeah, there's a reason they're on the market still. Zegras would be fantastic in Montreal. They would be just a dumpster fire. I believe that would be a terrible fit.
I think it's unlikely. I think it's highly unlikely. I think it was made even more unlikely with Demidov being drafted, right? Like, they have Caulfield in their top six. Demidov is guaranteed to be there, and I don't think they're going to add another smallish type player in that role. So we'll see. But
We will.
I just mentioned those guys because we've talked about them nonstop, and they're still available. I
Imagine
think there's
getting
a lot of
Marner
options.
and then Zegras and then all the small guys. How fun that would be. Under 5'8". That's it. Speaking of bigger guys, Eric, though, this is a fighting show. Montreal has one of the toughest guys in the league, Arbor Jack guy. Burst onto the scene a few years ago, slowed by a shoulder injury last year. Obviously frustrated for him and frustrating for me. We don't get to see the big guy fight. Where does he rank, do you think, in the NHL in terms of toughness and the impact he has on the Canadians? Because we know when he plays, he's an impact player, not just fighting. He's a solid player too.
Listen, there are a lot of tough, respected guys in this league. It's not quite what it used to be because of the role has been reduced. But there are a lot of guys that I look at and say, wow, like if I was on the ice, I would really be scared of this person. I think the guy who wears the crown on that one, and I probably maybe people would debate with me on this, because he just didn't play as much under John Tortorella over the last year. But the guy that I would fear the most is Nicolas Deslauriers. That guy, to me, is not only is he willing to go with anybody, but he's a beast. And he goes, he's an old school, I'm going to throw them. We're not just going to hang on here. And so that's one guy. And I know Arbor had a fight with him, a short one that, I think it was kind of level. I'm not sure he got the decision on that one. But there's not a lot of other guys that I would rank above Arbor in terms of toughness and willingness, and he's a
Is he
handful.
healthy, ready to go?
He will be healthy and ready to go. He had that shoulder operated on. He's had two shoulder surgeries, and we're gonna find out, both of them done, if it makes him better now that those injuries that he was playing with. He just said he was playing with the most recent one going back to junior, and that he's had on and off problems with it, right? So I think when people hear surgery, they think, oh, I think sometimes when you hear surgery, there's potential that you come back better because you've been playing with an ailment for a long time. He certainly is going to believe that, and he's going to be tested, right? Like, he's always going to be tested. But, that I think he'll be more tested on the hockey front, which I think he has the ability to pass that test. On the fighting front, test them at your own peril. That's not a guy that I'd be looking to go drop the gloves with. And the Canadians have a couple of those guys. Jaden Struble is a guy that I think a lot of players would look at and not think twice about fighting him, and probably would after it's done. He's a strong, strong, strong man, and he's fearless, and he's tough. Pezzetta is not a heavyweight by any stretch, but he is
He gives
willing.
her.
He is willing, and he is a great teammate. And he is a guy that I think, as a guy who's kind of been on the outside, inside of a lineup, 13th, 12th type of forward, the Canadians have been so reluctant to put him on waivers at any point because they know that they would lose him no matter what. And they don't want all the fighting responsibilities and defending the teammates to fall on Jack Eye, you know? So I think the Canadians have a pack mentality. They stand up for each other. And as they grow together, that I think that's only going to grow.
I agree. I think he's a good influence on the team, Arvid Žákai, especially with Rempe in the East, and the East is just getting bigger. You got Reeves, you got McDermott. It's a tough division these days. So they need him in the lineup. And we love having you on the show, Eric. Well, you know, I know you got to get going.
John, who do you see as the toughest? Like I said, D'Lo, I think Delorier. Like, who do you see as the guy that has that intimidation factor in the league? I'd be curious.
Yeah, I think you're bang on. Nicky, I played with Nicky in Buffalo, and I think the thing that he has going for him is he has speed, so he can get around the ice and make big hits. He's not just Rempe seems to have that same kind of impact where he's quick and he can get around and hit people. But, you know, Ryan Reeves has lost a step. I don't think there's a like Olivier Tim. Where did he sign with? He signed somewhere else. So he's up there, obviously. But Nicky is more than willing combatant. I love how he fights. Like you said, he's so fun to watch.
Jerry dude, and one of the nicest guys ever off the ice. Just
oh, beauty. He's got like four or five kids. He's just a great, great dude. So, yeah. All right, Eric. Your time is up.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having us. And enjoy the cottage. We'll be talking to you later, I'm guessing, when Montreal is hopefully winning, right? We'll see.
Hopefully back to some sort of relevance, right? Like, after a while, It's a strange league if the Montreal Canadiens aren't a part of the major conversation. So
it's not a good league when the Maple Leafs are the biggest Canadian team. So hopefully we can flip that. But anyways, thanks for joining us, Eric. We appreciate it. And we'll talk to you later, buddy. Cheers.
Take care. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.